From KCRW, this is Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiatakis with a show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. In his 13th floor apartment, Tony Grutman sits at his dining room table, looking out the window.
It's a beautiful view of the Hollywood hills, the Hollywood sign. We can see the observatory.
Grutman and his wife have lived in this apartment at Park La Brea for nearly a decade. You can see why they like it here. But now, they're behind on rent. Very behind.
As of April 1st, we had incurred, accumulated about $58,000.
You heard that right. $58,000. More than a year of rent. Grutman hopes to find a new job soon and work out a deal with the owners of Park La Brea to stay.
If they don't want to do that and I don't get some income, start earning some income very soon, then they will evict us, take us to court.
And they wouldn't be the only ones. All over LA County, the eviction tsunami that some experts predicted early in the pandemic has arrived. And tomorrow, August 1st, a deadline in the city of LA for some tenants with rental debt could mean a new wave of eviction cases. KCRW reporter Anna Scott is here to talk about it. Hi, Anna.
Hey, Steve.
Eviction tsunami. I mean, it sounds daunting. It is daunting, by the way. How many evictions are we talking about?
Well, I have some numbers from LA Superior Court that, just to give credit, were compiled by a policy analyst with the tenant rights organization Strategic Actions for a Just Economy. The numbers show more than 23,000 eviction filings across the county during the first 6 months of this year, which is a lot more volume than we've seen for a few years now, which makes sense because the city and the county and the state all had various rental assistance programs and different kinds of eviction protections in place for tenants who were impacted by COVID-19. But all of that pretty much ended by the end of March of this year. And now, not only are we back to pre-pandemic numbers in terms of evictions, but we're on pace to see even more evictions this year than we did in 2019 or 2018 or a few years before that.
Wow. I mentioned this a couple of moments ago. There's an August 1st deadline coming up for some tenants who owe back rent. Explain what that is. What does that deadline mean?
Yeah, so this is for tenants in the city of LA who owe back rent from the first year and a half of the pandemic. August 1st is the deadline for them to pay that off or face eviction. And then there's another deadline coming up in February for people who owe rent from October 2021 up until the end of January 2023, which is the category that Tony Grutman and his wife are in.
Yeah, $58,000. I mean, so the clock is ticking. Why are the courts, Anna, getting a higher volume of eviction filings now than even in 2019 or 2018 versus just returning to pre-pandemic levels? Why are we seeing many more?
Well, one person that I talked to about this who had an explanation is a landlord. His name is Dan Tenenbaum. His company owns about a dozen buildings in and around LA with a little over 500 apartments altogether. He says his company is evicting about 25 households right now, and most, if not all of them, owe more than $20,000 in back rent.
We've never evicted this number of people ever before. Now, part of it is just it's built up over almost a period of 3 years, but also is we've never, you know, normally you wouldn't have people having that huge of a balance either.
So things have gone back to pre-pandemic levels, but also there are people that have built up debts over time and the situation has just escalated.
Like Mr. Grutman, right? $58,000.
Yeah, exactly. And Dan Tenenbaum says he doesn't want to evict people, but having tenants with these huge debts is unsustainable for him as well. He has expenses that have gone up, like city trash fees, for example. He says he can't refinance because of increased interest rates, and he's dipping into his personal savings to maintain some of his properties. He feels like the local measures that the city and county have taken over the last few years have favored tenants at the expense of landlords, even though he says that he does understand the urgency of keeping people housed.
If you're feeling at risk of losing your housing and you're just working hard and just trying to pay the bills, you know, to be honest, their problems are greater than mine. So I don't want to even, you know, make that equivalency. But to think that it's only a one-sided story, to think that only one group is suffering would not be the case.
So I guess because it is hard, right? I mean, he's balancing and he doesn't want to demonize anybody, right? But at the same time, and he understands that there's this need. What about the landlords, though? Like, if you're a small landlord company, is there help?
There is some. Now, it's worth noting that all of the rental assistance that was available through the state, for example, that did go to landlords. So it helped tenants, but it was also money for landlords to make up some of that missing rent. Right now, landlords with 1 to 4 units can get mortgage assistance through the county. But a spokesperson for the California Apartment Association told me that there are a lot of landlords in LA who are like Dan Tenenbaum. They're bigger than someone who just has 1 to 4 units, but they're far from being a huge corporation like Blackstone, and they're struggling to get by.
Yeah, like a real estate investment trust, right? Like we've seen those. They're huge companies that seem to be doing okay. So landlords, the smaller landlords, they're struggling financially, and that's leading to evictions, right? Which we just heard. Back on the tenant side, people like Tony Grutman, they have a lot of debt. How typical is that?
Yeah, so I'll tell you more about him as an example. He's 76 years old. His wife is a retired teacher, but he was working until not long before the pandemic hit. He was running a swim club. That ended for reasons that were unrelated to COVID, but he still needed income, so he took a job as a driver for a couple different clients and was basically just scraping by with that when COVID hit. So he wasn't in a great position financially, but then lost that income because of the pandemic. And meanwhile, he deals with his own health issues too.
I started having cognitive issues, eyesight issues, hearing. I mean, you see, I'm wearing hearing aids. The latest has been obstructive sleep apnea.
He collected some unemployment during the pandemic. He and his wife also received rental assistance through the state for about a year and a half. But after that ran out, he still didn't have income. And he stayed put, hoping that by the time the eviction protections expired, he would have his swim club up and running again and could work out some kind of deal with his landlord to stay.
But in the meantime, the debt kept growing, how much money he went behind, and he's in his 70s and unable to work in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that hasn't panned out.
Not yet. And it's a kind of inertia, a terrified inertia that he described, you know, where it just seemed like staying put is the better option compared to the expense and the uncertainty of a move, because there's not a lot of other affordable options out there. And a lawyer that I talked to with the nonprofit Public Counsel who works with tenants facing eviction said that's not unusual at all. She says she also does see cases where landlords who have had to wait out rent freezes are now being aggressive about evicting lower paying tenants or even refusing to accept payments in some cases in favor of evicting.
Of just getting them out of there, right? And I mean, is there help for the Grutmans? Like, does the county interfere? I mean, what stops them from just being homeless?
Well, first, let me zoom out and speak broadly and say that there is not a lot of financial help available at this point compared to what there once was for any renters in this situation. Most of the rental assistance programs have closed and the county's eviction moratorium ended on March 31st. That said, there's some limited help available for tenants who are in danger of losing housing. There's a partnership that the city and the county put together called Stay Housed LA. They have a website where you can find resources if you're in that situation. This week, the City Council's Housing and Homelessness Committee is scheduled to consider a new package of tenant assistance measures that includes $18.4 million for a short-term emergency assistance program for low-income households that owe back rent. Now, that's just a committee hearing. It's not implemented yet. It will have to go to the full council eventually if it passes committee. So, in the meantime, for a lot of tenants who owe back rent, like the Grutmans, as these deadlines approach, it's really just going to be between them and their landlords to either negotiate a deal or not. And I have no idea how it will go in the case of the Grutmans. I did reach out to the owner of Park La Brea for what it's worth, but didn't get a response.
So we don't know what's going to happen to them specifically, but there are a lot of other cases just like them, right? Just like their case. So is that going to make the homeless crisis even worse?
Well, that is what a lot of people are worried about, including L.A. Mayor Karen Bass.
I'm very, very worried that this is going to contribute to the inflow of people on our streets. I'm not surprised, though. I was completely expecting it, because with the COVID relief, the eviction moratorium ending, with all of those things happening, we knew this was going to happen.
So now it's arrived, and most people, though, don't go straight from an apartment or losing an apartment to setting up a tent on the street. So when we'll see this reflected in the homeless count numbers and if remains to be seen. Some people will leave Los Angeles. Some people might end up unhoused for some period of time. But
living in their cars, perhaps.
Perhaps their cars, perhaps with friends or relatives. They'll never hit the streets or shelter, and they'll get out of it before they're ever officially counted as being unhoused, which, by the way, is actually the most common experience of homelessness in LA County. We just think of it as people we see on the streets, but for most people, it is short-term and episodic, and usually they get out of it without ever being counted. So we just don't know how this will show up.
A lot of variables, for sure, with a deadline approaching tomorrow. KCRW's Anna Scott, our housing and homelessness reporter. Anna, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Steve.
KCRW sponsors include Disney, presenting Young Woman and the Sea. This incredible true story from producer Jerry Bruckheimer stars Daisy Ridley as Trudy Ederle, who risked everything when she decided to swim the English Channel. The movie opens in select theaters Friday.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. As the WGA and SAG-AFTRA strikes drag on, folks without work are having a pretty tough time of it right now. One organization is trying to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, have it now.
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
World Harvest Food Bank has been giving free groceries to actors and writers and has pledged to do so for as long as the strike lasts. With me to talk about the happenings at World Harvest is Christina Wong, comedian and food bank influencer. Christina, nice to talk with you again. Hi.
So good to talk to you.
Last time that we did speak, you were sewing a lot of masks.
I was.
During the pandemic, yeah.
I have this martyr complex, which everybody gets to benefit from, so you're welcome. But yes, we have a... there's a situation right now where we have these people who make hundreds of millions of dollars who don't want to share it with the people who help them get rich. And what I'm talking about is the Hollywood executives. And they have actually said, we're going to wait for people to lose their houses, we're going to starve them out, and then maybe we'll go back to negotiating. We'll make them so desperate that they do this. So this is horrifying to me that they would say something so cruel, and they intend to enact something so cruel. So my favorite place in LA is my local food bank, World Harvest Food Bank. It's run by my best friend, Glenn Corrado. And I said to him, what do you think if we helped feed the folks on strike right now, my fellow union members on strike? And he said yes. And he did not really look at how many union members there were. So this is basically putting our food bank at capacity. But yeah. We're seeing about 100 union members a day come in who never had come into this place before. And we're loading up with food. And I'm hearing some pretty harrowing stories of, you know, it's already a precarious living to make as an artist in LA. People are showing up in tears, breaking down, crying. Some of them saying, I vow this will be my last time here. And I'm like, if it's not, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But basically, you show your union card and we give you a cart of groceries. And it's enough to feed your whole household and more.
We should note, again, I mean, this is specifically SAG-AFTRA and WGA,
yes.
But World Harvest is also offering for other union members through other people, right?
Yeah, so Local Unite here, Local 11, those are the hotel workers. But if you're of another union, you can either get support from 211 or another food bank, or you can make a $55 donation at World Harvest and get a box, or volunteer for 4 hours, or see if one of your striking union friends from SAG or WGA will walk you in and split the cart with you. And there's plenty of food in that cart that they can likely split with you.
Let's talk about the cart and the box. What's in the box?
So, so it's a very different model than other food banks where you show up like in a long line and get a box of food you don't choose from. It's set up a little like a grocery store. It's a very different model. You make a donation or you volunteer for 4 hours, and you usually get this huge cart of groceries, which you get to pick from. You get to pick the produce, the bread. It's all stuff that's been donated. It was all destined for a landfill. It's still good to eat. Most of the produce is organic, not all. And you just fill up the cart with what you want. And that's a huge thing with dignity, is having choice in what you put in the cart. And then you can go into the other section of the store and pick up the 6 items. And that usually is about what most people make on a grocery store purchase. So while you might not get if you want specific kiwis or specific, you know, tomatoes from this region, you might not find them, but you will get produce, you'll get fruit, you'll get greens, you'll get some sort of protein, you'll get some dairy items, and then there are things in cans if you want to pick from that too. But there's makeup and there's vitamins too also there. So it's kind of wowing to a lot of folks who are coming for the first time, because it's crazy that we have so much good food and so much stuff. It's just maybe a box was dented or a pallet was rejected by Costco, and so it ended up at World Harvest.
You declare yourself sort of a what is it, food bank influencer?
Food bank influencer.
What does that mean?
I could use these good looks for modeling beauty products or travel or lifestyle, but I was like, you know what? This food bank is so awesome. I am going to use my extensive sex appeal and major social media following, which is almost at 10,000 followers, to hawk this food bank. So I discovered this place in 2019. It got the Auntie Sewing Squad and all our partners through the pandemic. We were basically rerouting a ton of stuff from this place to our partners everywhere. And I'm talking about the Navajo Nation, communities at the border, farm workers. We were basically getting all these things rerouted to them. And it was a huge part of our survival. I just love this place so much. So it's my favorite place in LA. It has like the abundance of a lottery win to me. It's like being on supermarket sweep. This idea, like, everyone's so confused when you first go. They're like, I can put whatever I want in the cart. Yes. If you see that tomato, you want the tomato, put it in the cart. It's yours now, right? Like, it's like we're not used to this level of generosity in LA. And so we're just extending this generosity to our folks on strike and hoping that one of the 2% of our union that actually makes money as an actor will help pay it back so that we can pay for this crazy endeavor, which it's kind of long game what we're doing. It's not really being supported by anything right now, but just the infrastructure of the food bank.
Well, thank you for doing it. Thank you for all your help during the pandemic and now
of
during
course.
These moments of strikes all across the Southland and across the country, for that matter. Christina Wong, food bank influencer, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you, Steve.
If you'd like more info on World Harvest and what they're doing, head on over to our website, kcrw.com/GLA. Onward now with Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and what a time to be an Angels fan down in OC. Last week, the Halos star player Shohei Ohtani became the first to throw a shutout in one game of a doubleheader and then hit 2 home runs in the next one, which demonstrates why the superstar is expected to break some sort of contract record when he finally becomes a free agent. Now, Angels management says that's not going to be happening this season. And here to break it all down is Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times and our regular here on GLA. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Just hours, by the way, before that incredible doubleheader against Detroit, the Angels announced that they're not going to be trading Ohtani before the trade deadline. Were you surprised? I think a lot of people were surprised about that, right?
everyone was, because the Angels are not expected to make the playoffs. At least they weren't before this. They've been doing what they've been doing basically for the past decade, middling baseball around the 500 mark. So a couple more wins than losses with two of the best players in the game and Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani just burning away the primes of their careers on nothing. But when Angels owner Artie Moreno said, no, I'm not going to trade Shohei, far from it. I'm going to double down. We're going to do this one final push. It shocked a lot of people, but also excited baseball fans, because they're like, all right, well, let's see. You have the best player in the game right now, the most exciting player since Babe Ruth over 100 years ago, and he has said that he wants to play for a winner, so this is literally and metaphorically, of course, do or die time for the Halos.
So they're keeping him for right now, for this season. What's going to happen at the end of the season when he becomes a free agent? Are they going to, I mean, you said double down. Artie Moreno spent some money on Mike Trout, obviously, again, sort of muddling in the middle of baseball and not necessarily making it to the playoffs. Are they going to try and keep him? Do they have the money for that?
They're going to do everything possible to keep him. But what's very important is that the Angels need to win this year, at least make the playoffs, at least make a series. Because Shohei Ohtani, yes, he wants a lot of money. He's probably going to get the biggest contract ever in Major League Baseball history, probably professional sports history, at least in the four major American sports. But he has explicitly said for years now, I want to play for a winner. He is not, if the Angels do not make the playoffs, they have probably no chance at all to keep him. And Moreno, remember, he's a self-made billionaire, former advertising executive from Arizona. So he knows how to make money, but he so far has not been able to create a winner in, yeah, this is the 20th anniversary of him buying the team.
I mean, there's, right, Artie Moreno. But, I mean, there's another team, what, within 40 miles of the Big A that has been eyeing Ohtani as well, right?
Oh, my God. Well, two of them. I mean, you go up the 5 freeway, you got the Dodgers. You go a little bit further down the 5, and you have the San Diego Padres, which has spent a lot of money getting players like Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., Dodgers the same level. And all three teams, by the way, they're underperforming this year. Obviously, the Dodgers are far better than the other two. But, Shohei, he wants to go to a winner. If none of them are winning this year, he's probably going to go to, I mean, the Yankees are also doing terrible. So it really remains to be seen where Shohei's going to win. Maybe the Braves. I mean, no one wants to consider the Atlanta Braves, but they won a World Series a couple of years ago. They're the best team in baseball right now. They don't have the biggest budget, but I'm sure they would love to land a player like him.
Does this mean, I mean, I ask the question that Artie Moreno is serious. I mean, he's serious. He's obviously a serious baseball owner, has played around with maybe moving the Angels to another place. He's talked about Long Beach or making plans for somewhere else to get out of Anaheim. Is he serious about this baseball team?
Well, remember that last year, Moreno said he was going to sell the team in the wake of an FBI investigation that alleged a cabal was running Anaheim that led to the resignation of the mayor at the time. Now, the Angels were not involved or not named in this investigation at all, but a lot of people thought Moreno's just tired of just all the machinations of politics in Anaheim. So at the beginning of this season, a lot of people were surprised that he said, no, I'm going to keep it, but now you see why. Like, he loves baseball. He loves baseball. He has not been able to build a team, but now he sees with Ohtani in the team, not too far away from a playoff bid. Moreno's in his 70s. This is his last gasp, and he's got to double down at the very least. And look, I'm not the biggest Angels fan. I love baseball, but it's going to make exciting, incredible baseball through the rest of the summer and into the fall. Go Angels. I can't believe I just said that, but go Angels.
But will they make the playoffs? That's the question of the year. Gustavo Arellano with today's KCRW Orange County Line. Gustavo, as always, thanks.
Gracias.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, if you recycle, what do you put in that blue bin? What can actually go in there? You may have some questions. Well, maybe we have some answers for you tomorrow on GLA. Visit us online at kcrw.com/greaterLA or visit the app as well. We'd love to hear from you at our website. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Celine Mendiola, Phil Richard, Sonia Geis, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Christine Comito, Michael Stark, and Christian Bordahl all helped assemble today's episode. I'm Steve Chiotakis, remembering the immense creative genius that was Paul Rubens, who has left our realm. We love you, Pee-wee, and we know you loved us, even Dottie.
your dreams are gonna come true. Because guess what, kids? I said, guess what, kids? I'm gonna share all my luck with you. I'm Pee Wee Herman. I'm the luckiest boy in the world. Goodbye. Goodbye, boys and girls.